FM with Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for doing her best to make this wet, miserable, dark afternoon as short as possible. It's Tuesday the 19th of January and this is Game On.
You sound like you're really suffering there, Ruby. Well, coming up today, 7 All-Irelands in 12 years. Paddy Andrews is with us to reflect on his career with the boys in blue.
Paddy Andrews kicking it, hoping it'll come in. It looks good enough to me. It's gone over the bar. Great point by Paddy Andrews. He's in the groove. Again, it's Andrews. He's got to hit everything now at this stage. Feeling hot, feeling good. Why not? Two in a row.
Mark Langdon will have the latest European news, including big transfers, golden oldies, and a very rare red card for Messi.
And I knew it from the reaction of Lionel Messi. He knew he had done something naughty, was trying to get away with it, but VAR said, nah, can't do it.
And we have our weekly check-in with the big players heading for Cheltenham this week. It's Cork's Aidan Coleman, who's got some big rise on the horizon.
Epitont going through the gears on the near side, and it is Epitont who is quicking away like a superstar as they race up towards the line. How impressive is she? Epitont has just given Nicky Henderson a record 6th win.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. There are 2 games in the Premier League this evening, with Chelsea and Leicester kicking off at 8. And we'll be chatting to Mark Langdon a little bit later about that. And just after getting underway, 4 minutes gone, it is West Ham United and West Brom. And there's some positive news on the Irish front with Callum Robinson and Dara O'Shea both starting for West Brom. And I think we should also give a nod to Jason Knight as well. He captained Wayne Rooney's Derby County for the very first time over the weekend, and again this evening against Bournemouth. We had his dad Paul on last year talking about sending kids to England to play at a very young age, and it's great to see it working out for him. And it's very positive as well just to see the type of player that he is, all action, highly energetic, and he likes the possession based style of play too, so he could fit very well into Stephen Kenny's setup. And a little bit of news as well, Republic of Ireland defender Diane Caldwell is set to link up with her international teammate Denise O'Sullivan at club level, and because she's after completing a move to North Carolina Courage, so that is great for her. She's been absolutely fantastic for the Bundesliga side SC Sand and also for the Republic of Ireland, so we will be following her progress, and we'll also be chatting to her tomorrow, so that should be good.
It will be good for you. I'll tune in to make sure I listen.
Okay.
The golf in front, the JP McManus Pro-Am golf event has been postponed until the summer of 2022. The tournament was due to take place at Adair Manor in early July, having been originally cancelled last summer due to COVID-19 pandemic. Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia and John Rahm are some of the pros set to play, so hopefully they will be here in 2022 on the 4th and 5th of July, along with some of Hollywood stars, Mark Wahlberg, Hugh Grant and Jamie Dornan.
You can keep them. What about yourself? For you two to play?
Unfortunately, I had one stab at a qualifier.
Go on,
you fluffed it.
I wouldn't even say Dunica, I could call it fluffing it. It was absolutely pathetic.
What did you have to do?
What I had to do, basically, with the 2 lads I were playing with, whom my mum was embarrassed to talk about, I was that weak. I probably only had to score on maybe 3 holes, would have probably got the team over the line. I think I came in on 1 hole. It was just that embarrassing. I can't even,
Ruby, what got you? Because it wasn't pressure. We know you're well able for pressure. What had you fall down there?
I'd say it's just have to realise, Dunica, that I am pathetic at golf.
Well, when we chat
you
about
you, might get in as a caddy.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I caddied before for AP in 2010. AP McCoy, when he played with Tiger Woods, that was good fun.
That would be kind of soul destroying though, wouldn't it? Knowing that you could have qualified, couldn't be there, and you just get to carry someone's bag.
When you could have qualified is when you miss a 3-foot putt. But when you're walking around looking for your ball at the edge of the water all the time, there was no chance of actually ever qualifying.
Are you good caddy? Like, are you empathetic and understanding, or do you?
What do you think? Answer that question
No, I was caddying for him in the Irish Open Pro Am. In the K Club, so we stood up on a par 3 and we're standing there talking about Rory McIlroy, and AP says, a 9-iron. So yeah, Grant, put hand in the bag, hand in the club, he puts down, tees it up, whacks the ball a mile over the back of the green, and Rory McIlroy's laughing. He says, why are you laughing at? He says, he gave him the 6.
wouldn't matter.
So McCoy walks back with the club. He says, here you donut, you gave me the six. I said, you should have known. You were standing up there. I said, the six is way longer than the nine. He said, you should have copped it.
Well, you mightn't get the call back, so, yeah, for this time round, I'd say.
I don't think it was the caddy, it was his problem either.
Yeah, absolutely. We are on the countdown to the big Interpro match, Munster-Leinster, and we got the referees today. Andrew Brace will take control of the Munster-Leinster game, and Frank Murphy will referee Connacht versus the Ospreys. There's a bit of news out of Connacht. Andy Friend is enjoying really positive talks with the Connacht CEOs. Obviously there's 23 players out of contract at the moment up there, so hopefully there is news for their security and future really soon. But heading into that match, Robin McBride managed to catch up with Michael Corcoran, and Michael was asking him about the progress of Tadhg Furlong.
You know, it'll end a very frustrating time for Tadhg, who's kept himself going remarkably well, really. You know, with the Six Nations around the corner, I'm sure he's itching to get back then and check his heart in the ring as well. There are certain players who can just turn it on. They're just big match players who don't need that amount of game time before they're thrown in at the deep end. In my eyes, anyway, Tadhg is one of those players. You know, he's a class act, really.
Yeah, it's of interest. I always find that interesting when there is certain players that can step it up. I've been around some of them. Brian O'Driscoll, Paul O'Connell, you could put them straight in. There's other players, like myself included, put them straight in and honestly looked so out of your depth. Some of us have to get up to speed to play that level, but I think Tadhg Furlong's a special player. I'd rest him up personally for this weekend, make sure he's fresh for when he plays for Ireland, and then hopefully we could see him get good time going. But what we have now is competition for praise. There's with Andrew Porter putting in big shifts, but that's what we need coming into Six Nations and World Cups, quality players playing well.
So Rog would be fairly offended you didn't mention him, wouldn't he?
Rog could do it too, to be fair to him. Yeah, it's a temperament thing, Ruby. It's hard to put a finger on why some guys can do it. Dricko's the greatest one for it. You know, Dricko could be you mightn't have trained in 2 weeks, and then he can just go out and just be amazing. And you know, I think Robin McBride, who obviously is, you know, an incredible player in his time, and now a really good coach with, you know, the Lions and his time with Wales, I think he's identifying really quality with Furlong. So look, I think we all chat about player welfare. We see it in real proof when it comes to Leinster, Munster, Connacht, Ulster with the province. So the lads are well looked after. It's if we can get him back, because he's important.
It's that old sporting cliche, isn't it? Class is permanent, form is temporary.
There you go.
Right. Now we are going to move on to horse racing, because there was a big story in the news today that Cheltenham Festival winning trainer Charles Burns' licence has been suspended for 6 months after Viking Horde was found to have tested positive for a sedative after being pulled up at Tramore in October 2018. The IHRB report is very alarming. It's very interesting reading as well, but quite alarming. Before we go on to chat about this, it's just very important to say that there are no allegations that Charles Byrne was directly involved in the administration of the ACB to the horse. And Ruby, that aside, it is quite an intriguing story. What was your reaction to it today?
Disappointment, Marie. I suppose it is the complete opposite to what most people think when they think of a doping scandal within sport. This was not to enhance the performance, it was for the exact opposite of enhancement. This was to nullify what a horse could do, and ACP is actually the sedative that was used. It becomes active within 15 to 30 minutes of administration, and it can last up to 6 hours, but it's used to basically slow horses down, not speed them up. It's the complete opposite to what you expect in a doping case in any sport.
Why would you use it in normal circumstances, Ruby?
You'd use it. It is licensed in Ireland, and it's licensed for use in horses as a prescription only medication. So you would use it, Donica, for horses who didn't like to be shod. You would use it for ones that don't like to be clipped, and it would also be used then if horses need to be stitched or medical things like that. But most often it's used for when you're clipping a horse, which is like shearing a dog. But obviously you use a way bigger machine on a horse, and it's quite loud, and some don't like it. So that's what you would use it for, and that's what it's there for. It's to sedate like anything else.
So Ruby, then, just like from a jockey's point of view, how dangerous is it when this is recurring on racetracks? Again, we need to state that we don't know how the ACP entered Viking Hard, but there was a horse on the racetrack who was severely sedated.
Yeah, I think it's extremely dangerous, Marie. I think it shows whoever gave it to Viking Horde showed no regard for the animal, for the rest of the animals that were racing, or for the jockey that rode Viking Horde, or the other jockeys in the race. I mean, the neglect here is really serious, and horse racing is a dangerous enough sport without sending one out onto the track, or one getting out onto the track with a sedative in it. It's so dangerous.
This raises a huge amount of questions, Ruby, and today Sunday Times journalist David Walsh tweeted that the 6-month ban for Irish racehorse trainer Charles Burns conveys a sense of horse racing's doping, cheating, medicalisation problem, but only a sense of it. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I guess you think, and it comes down to proof, and how do you prove who gave the sedative to the horse? And there was a window during the afternoon in Tramore where Viking Horde was left unattended, and therefore it left a window for a third party to be involved. Now, there aren't CCTV cameras in the stable yard at Tramore. Now, it is a restricted area, so you do know exactly who is in there, but who was in the stable, you can't tell. It could have been anybody who had access to that restricted area, and unfortunately there was no CCTV cameras to see who exactly went into that stable, so you could point a finger at who it was. And I would believe if you could actually prove who was in the stable, definitely the ban would be much greater.
Okay, look, we know as well that there is a betting angle to this as well, and there was very suspicious activity took place on the exchange market. Again, no allegations that Charles Burns was directly involved in any of this, but can you tell us a little bit about it, and also how concerning is it for the racing industry that there is this type of suspicious activity?
Yeah, well, the betting one, Marie, I'll give you my layman's understanding of it. I'm not an expert in that department, but I think that the betting around Viking Horde was all traced back to an unnamed individual linked to the accounts, who was living in a foreign country somewhere. Who that individual is, that name wasn't released. But in the case of Viking Horde on the day in Tramore, he drifted from an opening price of 4-1 out to 8-1, so he doubled in his price. But this wasn't done on the bookmakers. This was on a betting exchange through a Betfair account. So somebody put up €34,889 in their account and laid Viking Horde at 8-1. So that person won €3,200 for a liability of losing €34,889. So if you're going to put up almost 35,000, you surely know what's going to happen, and that's where it was linked to. Now, there was similar bets related to the horse at Sedgefield in October, where the same account put up 30,000 to win 12, and at Galway in July, where the same account put up 55,000 to win 12,000. So, no, and none of those accounts, there was no attachment to Charles Burns in any of that. This was an unnamed person with an account. So, yeah, that's a worry. And I think in the IHRB's statement today, Marie, the committee didn't have any jurisdiction over the gambling, but they did raise issues about it. And I think it said the case illustrates the specific and additional challenges and dangers to the integrity of racing posed by the widespread ability to back horses to lose races for significant returns. The desirability of this practice, or how it might be better controlled within the available regulatory resources, is worthy of further constant review. And I would most certainly agree with that.
There was a huge amount of detail in the report today, and I have to say, it was good to see that, you know, like all the information been put out there.
It was, and even as far as what exactly, how much ACP was in Viking Horde's system. Now, the international screening limit is 10 nanograms per millilitre of urine, and the estimated level in Viking Horde's was 1,000 nanograms per millilitre of urine. So that was 100 times the applicable international screening limit. So at least we got a lot of detail as to what was in there, how much detail was in there. And I think, to be fair to the IHRB, and I would be their biggest critic, they have made this case as transparent as they possibly could.
Now, Charles Burns was contacted by RTE Sport this afternoon, and he said he would not be commenting on the report, but that he would be appealing the decision. Ruby, just to kind of broaden things out a little bit, over the last few weeks and months, there's been a lot of attention paid to the negative aspects of racing. David Walsh in the Sunday Times, Paul Kimmage in the Sunday Independent, Brian O'Connor in the Irish Times, they've all written articles, and they were quite negative, and they were highlighting some of the issues within the industry. But do you think when you take all of that into account and today that the industry is developing an image problem?
It's not good for the image of horse racing. Like any doping scandal is not good for the image of any sport. But I think, Marie, when you look at how Irish horses have performed internationally around the world and all the testing that they have gone through and have returned, I think it's one negative test from 2,900 winners. Something like that I wrote in the paper myself last week and I should have looked it up, but that's what it was. But racing mirrors life. And all sports, and be that religion, politics, whatever it is, there is a small percentage that cross the line in every walk of life and tarnish everyone's reputation. And racing is no different on that score.
I think it just feels a little bit different right now because I suppose it's you know, those very well-known journalists and some of the people that they have been writing about over the last few weeks are big names within the industry.
Yeah, Paul Kimmage, I read Paul Kimmage's article and his was basically about the IHRB and the lack of information in the cases that they had looked into. And I think when you look at today's case, they have obviously taken Paul Kimmage's, not advice, or Paul Kimmage's questioning on board, and you would have to agree with them. You need that much information. It was relating to two positive cases for the same substance, whereas one trainer, they released the exact levels in one horse and they didn't in another. So every sport needs to be fair and transparent. I haven't read David Walsh's article. I did read Brian O'Connor's, which dealt with a steroid issue with a trainer in County Meath called David Dunn, who got a 4-month ban. But again, the burden of proof came onto who gave the horse the steroids, and the steroids could have been there up to 6 months. He only had the horse for 2 months. Now the horse was under his care, so he got the ban. But I think that the IHRB are going to try and expand that further to be able to test horses outside of just trainers' yards into studs and all equine premises, and they have to be doing that.
Well, it does seem like it because it feels a little bit murky, which isn't a good thing.
No, it does, and sure, look, it's just like every sport, Marie. Bad news is not good for any sport, whatever it is.
Okay, well, on that note, let's take a break and we'll get back to speaking about the good aspects of sport, and we'll be joined by Dublin, former Dublin star, Paddy Andrews.
With Green Farm, healthy snacking made easy. With Green Farm's high protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So it is 1 month to the day since Dublin did their 6 in a row, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by the recently retired 7-time All-Ireland winner, Paddy Andrews. Paddy, first of all, how are things since retirement? Only a few days ago, really.
Good, yeah. Thanks for having me on, Marie. It's been a hectic couple of days over the weekend and stuff. Still kind of working away and things like that. And then, obviously, the response from when they announced it officially on Thursday, just kind of going back, some lovely messages coming through from teammates and ex-teammates and coaches and friends and people along the way, you know. So, kind of busy going back to everyone and thanking them for that. So, it's been... We're pretty full on over the last few days, all right now.
Paddy, did it surprise you how many people texted you or tweeted you to say thanks and enjoy yourself?
It did, I have to say. I was pretty overwhelmed. It's funny, like I made the decision and look, to be honest, I probably knew I was gonna be out the door after this year's championship, well before Christmas. So that gave me time to kind of mentally prepare for it. You know, it makes it a bit easier that I knew it was coming. And I would have spoke with Desi Farrell, probably about 2 weeks ago when it was official then, and it was real that I was going. So that gave me time to kind of get over the kind of the emotion and side of things. But once I announced it and then the phone started topping, you know, it never got as much action as it did over 2 or 3 days. And just funny catching up with people you might have been in college with, old teammates, people you wouldn't have spoke to in years, you know. So the reaction was great in that way. It's kind of very proud looking back on it and taking time to let it soak in. But yeah, I never realised it was as fucking over those couple of days, you know.
Paddy, how does that chat with Desi go?
Tonica, it was probably straightforward, I have to say. I think we both knew it was the end of the road. I tell you, I met Desi this time last year, so January 2020. So basically, after we won the the five in a row in September 19, there was probably about six or seven of us in that bracket where that achievement kind of felt like a culmination of something. It was a historic achievement. We've been building up to it for years. Jim and all his management team moved on, and it did kind of feel, even the celebrations afterwards of that, it did feel like it was nearly the end of a journey. We'd worked together for so long. So for guys like myself that would have played for probably 10 years, naturally you're probably starting to look at, is this the end of the road? So I was, to be honest, I would have liked to have stayed on. I still think I could have played on, but I met Desi and kind of had a conversation with him this time last year, very open. He's a new coach coming in. He would have coached a lot of the younger guys. I wouldn't have played under Desi before. And we kind of said, look, what do you think? I would like to come back. I think I could still offer something. But if you want me to kind of get out the door, I can do that as well. Just kind of whatever he thought himself. But it was very, he was like, no, I definitely want you to stay on. I think you can still play and things like that. So that was great. So I kind of went into last year knowing that I'm going to give it everything I had, and that would probably be the end of the road, whatever way it panned out for me. And look, just the nature of it, it wasn't the best year in terms of, for me personally, it tore my hamstring, I think, three times throughout the course of the season, and I'd never torn my hamstring before. I was never quick enough to tear my hamstring. So the body was kind of acting up, and then I wasn't really playing. I couldn't get into the team throughout the championship, and look, it's probably, you know yourself, it's the end of the road. So I would have had a great relationship with Desi over the course of the year, so I wouldn't say he was overly surprised with us when he made the call, and I was kind of happy with it as well. So a nice way, I suppose, to be able to kind of end it on your own terms, but still an emotional one, obviously, after so many years playing.
Yeah, and you had such an amazing career as well. And when you think about it, like, I'd say if you just cast your mind back to when you started out, those early days that weren't filled with success like they were in the later part, it must be almost surreal to think that you've walked the steps of the Hogue seven times for Sam Maguire.
It is. And do you know what, Marie? It's funny when you're in it, and the guys will be aware of this as well, when you're in that environment and you're playing, and you just don't get time to kind of assess, and you nearly don't take it all in at the time, because whatever, the way the championship is and you're playing week on week, the way our squad was, the competition for places, you could never rest on your laurels. And then also when Jim Gavin is your coach as well, there was no time to kind of step back and say, kind of nearly give yourself a pat on the back. It was just relentless. It was the next game, the next opponent, the next season, the next competition. So it's funny, you probably don't appreciate the success and winning those All-Ireland at the time as much, whereas now, like I say, I've had a couple of weeks where I knew I was going to be finished up. It's only really at that stage, and then the conversations would have had over the weekend with people and starting to reminisce on all games, it does start to kind of hit you then, the magnitude of the achievements we've had, and for me personally being part of such an incredible team, because like you're right, it definitely wasn't like that when I started out. But it's funny, you probably didn't appreciate it when you're in the competition and you're playing, just because it was just so much focus on the next challenge, you know.
When you did retire, lots of pictures surfaced of you in the corner backs jersey, which people had almost forgotten that you played back there. How did you evolve as a player from playing in the backs to the forwards, like at the elite level as well? You know, like often you'd see it in club, or you know, someone playing junior would be in goals in midfield, but not many people do it at that top level.
No, and to be honest, it probably showed where Dublin were as a team at that stage as well, that we definitely didn't have the depth of maybe players that we've been fortunate to have over the last 4 or 5 years. But I was actually, I was never really a back, to be honest. I went into DCU around 2006, I think it was, and basically the international rules, the junior international rules were still going on at that time. I think we were the last year to play it under 18. We went in my leavings for a year, and we had a brilliant team, Michael Murphy and Gary Brennan, Pierce Hanley, loads of unbelievable players that would go on to have great careers. But it turned out like Niall Moynagh was the coach of that team, and he was obviously the kind of one of the main men in DCU. So it turned out about 12 of that team, of the Irish team, ended up going to DCU the following year. So we started playing the Freshers' Championship. We won the All-Ireland Freshers' Championship the following year. But basically, we had too many forwards that we just needed to start filling in these players around the team. And I ended up going back playing centre-back. And centre back playing in an all conquering freshers team is a hell of a lot different from playing cornerback at senior intercounty level. But that's how it started. It was just nearly by accident I played in that DCU team and we had success, and then went into the Dublin squad and we were probably a bit short at the back, and somehow I ended up playing cornerback, marking the Gooch in Grove Park. So, I didn't play there since, actually, as well. So it was a short-lived experiment, but I was always naturally a forward, you know, so we were absolutely relieved. And I think Dublin supporters and my teammates were relieved when I got out of the full-back line as well, you know.
So you marked the Gooch, but you lined out with Bernard Brogan, Dermot Connolly, Dean Rock, Kieran Kilkenny, Brian Fenton, Kevin McMenamin. It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
Which fella did you line up on any given Sunday and think, thank God he's on the team?
It's funny, and this is when you look back, you realise how blessed I am. Like there, some of those guys have gone down as you know, arguably the best players of their generation. But for me, and it's funny, it's become quite topical in more recent years. Cluxton was always nearly like a comfort blanket for me and for the whole team. Just with him there and his longevity and his quality, I think you've seen there's been a huge emphasis in the last couple of years on kick-outs for and against and trying to get steals. And you watch recent games and every team is trying to push up on kick-outs and win the ball back. And the pressure he's put under by opposing teams, everyone will say, if you're playing Dublin, one of the first things you try and do is can you stop their kick-outs? Can you put pressure on Cluxton? And for 20 years, he just continuously, he gives us such a platform. And with him in goal, he's an archy old fella, but he's just a brilliant guy to have in your corner. And always felt, with his experience, the aura he gives off, the calmness, and then also just his quality. He was an amazing guy to have. And still have for that team. He's just a launch pad for so much of what we did, you know.
And what about the managers? Because, you know, when you look at them on paper, Pillar, Pat Gilroy, Jim Gavin, Desi Farrell, like huge figures in the game. But when you span it over your, look at the span over your career, who would you say had the biggest influence on you as a footballer?
Look, Jim was probably the longest guy I served under, 7 years at senior, and I would have played, I think, 2 years. He was my under-21 coach as well. So, like, well, with Pillar, I was just starting out. It was Pillar's last year, and he gave me my debut. And that's obviously a big moment for any player. With Pat, Pat and the role he played can't be understated in terms of breaking the duck and winning in All-Ireland with the team. But Pat actually dropped me off the panel as well. And that was a huge learning point for me as well. Like I wasn't performing, and I just wasn't ready to basically play to my potential. Just a young lad being a bit of an agent, like so Pat kind of gave me some home truth. So that had a huge influence on me, but I probably didn't get to fully appreciate that on the pitch. Whereas when I came back and Jim took over, I suppose the lessons I learned from Pat stood to me a lot. And then Jim, to be fair to him, he always backed me, you know, and if a guy like Jim is backing you, and like Ruby was saying, listening out some of the forwards there, I was generally always starting with Jim, and you kind of think to yourself, well, look, if he believes in me and I'm starting, and you look over on the bench and we've some absolutely amazing players that you're being picked ahead of, that just gives you a confidence which as a young player I probably didn't have at that time. So that really kind of pushed me on to the next level, and I think Jim had that influence on a lot of the players, but and that's a part of the success we have. But definitely, I feel that was like a turning point and launched my career under him. And I was just lucky that timing-wise, my age and where I was in my career probably fit perfectly with what Jim was trying to do as well. So I'd say he probably definitely had the biggest impact in terms of on-pitch output.
And just in terms of football, because I don't think it gets talked about enough really, Paddy, just how good at football your team is, and just the coaching that must have went into it to be able to produce just these fantastic players of the game.
Yeah, and it's funny, I started out, my first year was 2008, and we lost to Tyrone in the All-Ireland quarter-final by, I think it was 15 points. It was a bloodbath in Pillar's last game. And then the following year, I ended up, like I say, I was in the full back line playing against Kerry, and we lost by 17 points. So we seemed so far away from winning in All-Ireland. And a lot of those guys, like those teams, like Dermot Connolly, Cluxton, Brogan, all these guys were playing in that team. Keane Sullivan, the same age as me, started out. And you think to yourself, Jesus, we are so far off it. But it's funny how quickly it turned, and it's just really like a perfect storm, the success we've had under Jim and the start of this run, and five or six in a row it is now. Young players came through, like Fenton and Kilkenny and Jack McCarthy, they're all the same age. It's an incredible underage team to come through. Guys like James McCarthy and myself and Dean Rock and these guys started, we're coming into our prime, I suppose, and then we had the elder guys like Cluxton and Brogan, who had the know-how as well of winning All-Ireland in 2011, and it just felt like the timing of everything between the young players coming through, the middle guys having that bit of experience, and then the older guys having got over the line in 2011 and broke that duck, it just moulded perfectly, and then you put Jim in charge of it, like a perfect manager for that time and for that group of players, and just the confidence started to grow, and you, like anything in sport, you get a bit of momentum and you get on a roll and you just feel like you nearly can't lose, and any new players that would come onto the panel bought into that straight away, because they could see what we were doing, and there was no, everyone just bought into it, like the guys are having success, whatever they're doing I'm going to do that because that's what works, and it's nearly like you say a perfect storm of timing between those things that have helped contribute to what we've done over the last few years, you know.
And now it feels like the most asked question these days is, how long can it go on for? Like, how long do you think it's going to go on for, Paddy?
I don't care anymore since I'm gone. Like, so, no, look, it's not going to go on forever. These things go in cycles. Like, I know that there's probably frustration from the outside looking in, and I know a lot of talk around the Leinster Championship and competitiveness of it, and like we all love sport and we go to sport because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, that, you know, what team is going to win, what team is going to perform, so I get there's probably frustration that no one likes to see a team dominate and carry on, but from my perspective, stepping out, I don't think there's going to be a 10 in a row or this type of thing. These things just come to an end, and as older players move on, I'm sure there might be a few other guys who might step away and some of our key players move on a little bit. I don't think it'll be that level of dominance going forward. I hope I'm wrong, but you look at even the previous decade where Tyrone and Kerry were the standout teams, you know, a brilliant Mickey Hart team that won 3 All-Ireland, and an amazing Kerry team that would have hammered us a few times with Gooch and the O'Shea's and things like that. Naturally, these players, of course, there's young, talented guys coming through, but you're talking about like generational players, and particularly with those teams and with Dublin, when Cluxton or Fenton or these guys finish up, it's very hard to replace them to that level. So I just think the cycle will come to an end, and hopefully not too soon, but it's not going to go on forever, definitely not, you know.
Paddy, on a professional level, you're a client manager with Metis Ireland.
Yeah.
Budget wise for the country, have you been flat to the boards?
You're looking for a pension room.
I'm looking for help here. Like I said,
he's having a bad day now. He's looking for a bit of positivity.
Ah, jeez, I know. It's hard going out there at the minute. For us, with work and things like that, I suppose I kind of started my career outside of in football. I worked with Davey Stockwalkers there for about 8 years and kind of just got stuck into that. And there'd probably be quite a few guys, you know, O'Keefe Sullivan and Bernard Brown, these guys who kind of kicked off our career while we were playing with Dublin. And I always found that was a positive thing for me, that I was very busy outside of football, I wasn't sitting around waiting to go training in the evening and things like that. I preferred to be busy and things. And nearly when you went out and after a tough day like you're having now, leaving the office and going out training, I loved that, and that was nearly a release, and really enjoyed that, and I think that stood to me throughout my career, and I thought the positive thing for me now that I've finished up, and inevitably there's obviously a lot more free time for me that allows me to kind of get stuck into work and the business here in Dublin, and kind of help grow that as well. So it's nice to have those things, and I think you need to have those things when you step away from football, because it's such a huge part of your life that it will inevitably leave a void. So having your professional career and hobbies and things to do outside of that are just really important to have, because it can be a lonely place. You know, you hear these horror stories where guys fish up in any sport when they've been there for so long, and there's nearly an emptiness there. You're like, your personality and your persona is linked to your sports career, and that can be dangerous, I suppose, in some instances if you don't have your ducks in a row, I suppose. when you do hang up the boot.
We've talked quite a bit over the last year and a half about the difficulties of leaving the WhatsApp group, but when you're on a team that has gone around or gone on for so long and you know players have left, do you have a retired players WhatsApp group now?
No, I haven't been invited into it yet, so I'll see, maybe the lads do. It is. It's not a cliche, you hear it all the time, but the group with Dublin, like a lot of the guys, the core of that group have been together for the best part of a decade. We'd be very, very close as a group. And I've seen it with guys that have left the group. You know, Paul Flynn would have been a huge leader in it, Alan Brogan and these guys. Once you're out and you step away from you're gone, and the kind of catching up with the lads during the summer for coffee and things like that, things you nearly take for granted, you know, you're out. But probably part of the success that Dublin have had and the success you have, that there's a serious focus in the group, and we don't get distracted and stuff that goes on in the media or talking to people outside of the group. You know, it's a very tight and very closed group. You know, we don't kind of engage with a lot of what people call distracting and stuff like that. So for me, leaving that group, and I know going forward, you know, I am on the outside, you know, so I wouldn't expect to be catching up with the lads during the summer in the middle of the championship and things like that. They'd have no interest in talking to me. It's more just getting focused on the team and the performance, and that's just the reality of it. That's, you know, I'm sure we can catch up in the off season or things like that, but it's the emotional thing. I've been there 12 years and obviously been very close with the guys, but time now is on, you know.
Yeah, such a big part of your life. Well, you were lucky enough to have an absolutely fantastic career, and seven All-Irelands is actually unbelievable, and as you said, I don't think it's until you take the step back and realise what you achieved that it'll actually sink in. Well, I just want to say congratulations on a really super career, and thanks so much for talking to us, Paddy.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavor.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. I really enjoyed that interview, I have to say. It's nice to be talking to you, lads.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I didn't have a problem being kicked off the WhatsApp group. It was the access to tickets killed me.
You'd have to go the roundabout way. Yeah,
exactly.
Direct.
You should have just been a solo sports person. There was no WhatsApp group.
No. Did not have a jockey's one? Okay. Maybe you weren't asked on it.
I think WhatsApp. I think I'd say I was before WhatsApp.
Oh, yeah, right. You probably were. Bebo.
Okay, well... It is nil all between West Ham United and West Bromwich Albion, and at 8:15, I think I said 8 o'clock earlier, Leicester are playing Chelsea, and we are joined now on the phone by Mark Langdon, I think anyway. Mark Langdon, how are you?
Good evening, I'm good, thank you. And yourself?
Sure, not too bad at all. Now, we were just talking about the football earlier, but I think before we get on to the Premier League, we have to start with Messi, because I think everybody got a shock to see him get his first red card for Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this kind of petulant sort of before, really, from Messi. Most notably with Argentina, he's been sent off a couple of times for them. With Barcelona, it's always been kind of, I think, accepted, really, that referees maybe do give him the benefit of the doubt when he shows dissent or any type of aggression. On this occasion, he did go too far. Barcelona were losing the Spanish Super Cup final to Athletic Bilbao 3-2, right in the sort of depths of extra time when he shoved an opposition player in the face. It wasn't a punch, it rarely is in football terms, but it was kind of a push to the head. Was always likely to see red card, and I think that it probably just plays on the narrative, really, that Messi's upset with the style and direction that Barcelona are going in, and another trophy slipping by.
Because it's so unlike him. He's been kicked, pushed, tripped all his career. Why react now? Is he coming to the Barcelona? Is he just so frustrated with the place?
I think the frustration is a big part of it. I mean, just individually, you know, within this game and taking out the context of what happened in the summer when he was threatening to leave the club. You know, Barcelona twice led in this cup final. They conceded and sort of really late equaliser that took the game to extra time. Then Iñaki Williams scored a brilliant goal that took the game away from Barcelona. They're unlikely to win La Liga as it stands at the moment. They've got Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League last 16, so they're underdogs in that tie as well. And I think he can just see the sort of silverware slipping away. I don't think his relationship with Ronald Koeman, the coach, is perfect. You know, I think he feels that Barcelona, and he'd probably be right in saying that, you know, they're not the same team that when he was playing at the top of his level with Pep Guardiola. And even after Guardiola left, there was still a lot of his friends at the club, the likes of Neymar and Luis Suarez, etc. So I think he's just become very disgruntled with life at Barca.
Moving on to Mesut Ozil. I wasn't one of the million people who watched his flight plan to Turkey, but he has joined Fenerbahce. Do you think he's going to, I suppose, just be the player he was before? A resurrection there?
I don't think he can be that player anymore. I'm not sure that that player that won the World Cup and that was Arsenal's record signing and could dominate games for Real Madrid, I'm not sure if that player is still there. That's not to say that he can't have a successful time at Fenerbahce. He's obviously, you know, dropping down the sort of leagues in terms of standards, and he will at least be loved. You know, he maybe didn't get that sort of feeling from the succession of Arsenal managers towards the end. I mean, some would argue that maybe that was as much his fault as anybody else's, but, you know, at Fenerbahce, the fans have been so excited by his arrival. I think they're expecting the Mesut Ozil that won the World Cup and that was so brilliant previously. It may end up being a bit like when Gareth Bale came back to Tottenham, and you know, the player that you think you're getting is maybe not quite there anymore. But he had to leave Arsenal. He says he supported Fenerbahce as a boy. I know there have been other players that have said that when they're signed for clubs in the past, but he has, you know, close links to Turkey despite playing for Germany. Fenerbahce are a big club. They're hoping to win the league this season, and his signing has brought sort of new levels of excitement that haven't been seen in Turkish football for a while.
You mentioned PSG facing Barcelona in the last 16 of the Champions League, and Pochettino won his first trophy with them last week.
He did, yeah. He beat another former Tottenham manager, Andre Villas-Boas, of Marseille, 2-1 in the sort of the French equivalent of the Community Shield that was sort of played rather at the start of the season, was played in the middle of the season this year. He's since sort of been isolated from the team because he's suffering with the coronavirus at the moment. So an up and down week for Pochettino, but finally getting that kind the monkey off his back about he'd never won a trophy. I'm sure it'll be the first of many with Paris, but I think we've spoken before, the one that he wants, the one that they want, is the Champions League, and it's a tough path to go all the way in that competition.
And just before we let you go, will Leicester City be top of the Premier League tonight, do you think?
Oh, I'm not so sure. I think it could be a draw, actually. Chelsea haven't played that well this season, or certainly in recent months, but they have got a lot of quality, and the size of their squad could sort of help, you know, with a quick turnaround. So I wouldn't be surprised if this was a low-scoring draw.
Mark Langdon, thanks a million. Before we go to the break, West Ham have scored and lead West Brom 1-0.
On-the-go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We're going to talk racing on a positive note, Marie, this time, if that's okay.
Phew.
I'll start again. Joining us on the line is Aidan Coleman, who is from Inishannon in County Cork, and he does, of course, ride two of the anti-post favourites in Cheltenham's Big Four races, the Champion Hurdle on Epitant and the Stayers Hurdle on Paisley Park. Aidan, how are you?
Yeah, all good, guys. Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Thanks for taking our call. Aidan, I was just thinking, looking at the clock here beside me, around about now, in exactly 8 weeks' time, you'll be heading back in home, having won the Champion Hurdle on Epitant, or maybe wondering what went wrong. Are you excited about it?
Sound, Ruby.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. But yeah, looking at things like that, that kind of happens regularly. Was the same with Paisley Park last year. Going to the races, I think, like, how could he get beat? And would have been an act of God, or for lack of a better expression. And, you know, he did. So, you know, we've met disasters like that before, or what we see disasters as, and we've came out better and stronger. So, you know, what will be on the day, really.
Exactly. Look, she was brilliant in the champion hurdle last year. Obviously, Barry Geraghty has retired since, and you have gotten the plum right on her. And she was spectacular in Newcastle in the fighting fifth.
Yeah, that was a massive thrill. You know, great. You know, it was great. You know, great for someone like me to get the call up for her, and the fact that it went well, and you know, it all, you know, went to plan was great. So yeah, that was a great thrill for myself.
And she headed from there to Kempton at Christmas. But to be honest with you, Aidan, looking back at the race, you never looked happy on her.
No. I actually rang Barry on the way home, because I remember reading in his book that he said she got quite upset going out in the when she got beaten the Mayor's Novice at Cheltenham a couple of years previously. So I was kind of ringing to ask him what kind of upset did she get, or to ask, pick his brain a bit on it, because she was very similar at Kempton, and considering there was nobody there at all because of the COVID restrictions, you know, you'd imagine if there was people there, it would have been exaggerated, like you say, in a Cheltenham environment. So considering there was no one there, she did get quite agitated. But on the day, I think if you look at the sectionals and, you know, Silver Streak's kind of performance, she wouldn't have had to underperform that much for him to do that. We were 8 lengths clear of Ballyandy, who's a very admiral horse and a solid yardstick. So, you know, it probably wasn't as bad a run as it looked, but it definitely wasn't her running at the same time.
No, I don't think it was, because I think she'll take all the beating in the champion hurdle. But I think, and I thought last year, like you did, going with Paisley Park, he looked unbeatable in the stayers hurdle. He obviously had a fibrillating heart afterwards, but he looks to have at least come back to himself.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at his Ascot win, you know, over Christmas there, that's actually the best form he probably has. Even when he won the stairs hurdle, he beat Sam Spinner, I think, Bewes Hurd, and Baugheen, who was probably the latter, well, last stage of his hurdling career. He went on, obviously, novice chasing and kind of did well again. But beating a horse like Tyne Hill is probably the best horse he's probably beat over hurdles today, to be honest. So you could arguably say, you know, he's definitely as good as ever, and possibly maybe slightly better.
We won't see Epitant between now and Cheltenham, but we probably will see Paisley Park and the Cleeve Hurdle at Cheltenham in a fortnight's time.
Yeah, I need to go sit in them soon, actually, give them a school. Sounds to be all going well at home. I don't actually see a lot of them, to be honest. But no news is good news in that front, so I'll sit in them next week, and then hopefully go to the Cleeve, and you know, he's won the last two runnings of that, so it'll be nice to get another one on the board.
You had your first winner in Cheltenham back in 2009, I think, when you won the Port Thames and KF Armis. You won the Arca last year and put the kettle on. Do you think you'll get back on her when she travels back across the Irish Sea?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I'd hope so. I couldn't go to Leopardstown for COVID reasons. Unfortunately, it was a shame. Where she was coming to, actually, Kempton originally. So hopefully, you know, as long as if I picked to go somewhere else or didn't want to go on Ryder, it was just one of these things in the world we're in at the moment, so I couldn't get there. So I'd hope to, but look, you know, what will be in that front.
You've had a stop-start season. You broke a humerus back in August time, I think it was it?
Yeah, just the end of July. So yeah,
all lined up and good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it was fine. It was, funnily enough, considering it happened in, you know, July, if it was happened a little bit later, if it did happen in August, I would have missed a ride in Epitant. So, glad it happened, you know, a little bit before it did.
Do you happen to believe in fate or anything like that?
Maybe karma and being in the right place in the right time, and maybe if you try your best and things like that.
I was flicking through videos earlier and I came across you winning the Dingle Derby, and I'd swear you were in JP McManus's colours.
I didn't win a Dingle Derby. I was placed in it a few times. I had plenty of winners around Dingle, but yeah, I did actually. I got him off Dennis Hogan, the trainer, believe it or not, he sold them to me. He probably robbed them out of somewhere like Charlie Swans and then sold them to me. So that's what age am I now? That's 20 years ago now.
It is, at least. No, I just thought it did. Kind of was thinking, God, there he is wearing those colours all those years ago. That was just meant to be him and Epitant.
Yeah, no, we've had plenty of great days in those colours in more recent times. So, you know, it would be nice. Definitely would be nice.
And Aidan, what else do you think you might have come? You're obviously riding first jockey for Ollie Murphy. Has Ollie got much?
There's bits and pieces. Ollie's obviously in his infancy in the training side, so the young horses there and the type of horses like that Ollie and his father Aidan would buy would probably need a bit more time before they start coming to hand and start churning out the quality horses. So there will be plenty there from Ollie's, but of note at the moment, it's hard to say, but he's definitely a trainer over the next few years, kind of when he kind of gets his foundations in his going places. There's obviously, you know, plenty of JPs, and I ride plenty for Nicky Henderson as well, and hopefully Henry the Bombhead might throw me on a few as well when he comes over. So look, the you know, the championship races are looking very strong. You know, as in the champion hurdle, champion chase, stairs hurdle, and you know, there's hopefully something nice to pick up in the Gold Cup as well. So it all bodes well. We just have to get there in one piece now.
Well, with rides like Epitant and Paisley Park, you'll be the envy of many. Aidan Coleman, thanks a million.
No worries, thanks very much.
That's all we have time for, lads. I was going to ask, actually, what did he break before we go?
His humerus, which is the upper bone in your arm between your elbow and shoulder. Second biggest bone in your body, Marie.
I need to start making notes of all these different bones and then just looking back on it.
He's broke them all, so you can go through them with Ruby.
Encyclopedia. Okay, we will be back tomorrow. Ruby won't be back tomorrow. He'll be a week away from us, back next Monday. But
I'm
we have Diane.
I'm
going
to save the rest of the week off because my kids came running in last week. Daddy, you've nothing else to do for the week.
The homeschooling.
It's just radio I didn't have.